Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us for our weekly Land of Sky Regional Council COVID-19 response calls. These calls are intended to be a way to share information in our region to help our region better respond to the challenges brought on by COVID-19. And so I appreciate y'all taking some time out of your day here on the first part of September. It's a little warm day today, but it's getting closer to fall. It's hard to believe how quickly the summer has gone. Just a few housekeeping measures before the call gets started. These calls are recorded. All participants are muted, so if you need to ask any questions or share any comments or anything, please do that in the chat box. And you can text me at 828-768-3216. If you're joined by phone, or if you're unable to enter a question or comment in the chat box. Just give you an upcoming schedule. We're going not to have a call next week, so we'll take a break on Thursday, September 10th. So hopefully we'll have some good things to share with you the following week. And on September the 17th, Dr. Mike Walden, economist at NC State and distinguished professor with their College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, will be joining us. And Dr. Walden is one of the preeminent economists, economic thinkers in North Carolina. So we're really excited that he can join us. So I want to first start the call with an update from Governor Cooper's office. We appreciate Drew Christie with the governor's office for joining us. He's always been really generous of his time to share with us. So we'll start with Drew, and then we'll have a state legislative update from Chris Wall. And then I think we have Scott Dedman with Mountain Housing Opportunities and Jim Barrett with Pisgah Legal Services. And we're going to talk about affordable housing and possibly a pending eviction crisis that may come our way for our region and across the country. So, Drew, I'll turn the program over to call over to you, and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Nathan, for having me, and thank you to Land of Sky Regional Council for hosting this meeting. So I'll start off with some numbers and then go into the governor's executive order, which will take effect this Friday, and then also talk about the new news from Department of Commerce and DES, which was announced today. So for the numbers, as of today, there have been 172,209 lab confirmed cases, and there have been a total of almost 2.5 million tests completed thus far, and there are currently 858 people hospitalized due to COVID-19. And so because North Carolina's COVID-19 trends are stable, the state will move to safer at home phase 2.5 of easing restrictions effective this Friday, September 4th at 5 p.m. And so for several weeks, we have seen our key indicators stabilizing or even decreasing. And so because of that, that's why we are able to move into phase 2.5. And here are some of the key points of phase 2.5. So it ups the limits on mass gathering from 10 people indoors to 25 people indoors, and then from 25 people outdoors to 50 people outdoors. It allows playgrounds to be open. It also allows museums to be open at 50% capacity. A major one here, it allows gyms and other indoor exercise facilities to be open at 30% capacity. The age requirements for wearing masks will include children down to the age of 5. Another bullet point here is capacity limits at restaurants and personal care businesses like hair and nail salons. All of that stays exactly the same. Bars, nightclubs, movie theaters, indoor entertainment facilities will still remain closed, and large venues will still be subject to the mass gathering limits of, again, 25 indoor and 50 outdoor. So Safer at Home Phase 2.5 continues our state's dimmer switch approach to easing restrictions and will last through at least October the 2nd. Even though we're seeing our trends stabilizing, that stability is not necessarily a victory. We're making progress. We're moving in the right direction, but we can't claim victory yet. We're still working to get there. So we can only do all of this safely, only if we keep doing what we need or what we know works to prevent the spread of the disease, which is, again, the three W's: to wear a cloth face covering, to wash your hands frequently for at least 20 seconds, and to wait at least 6 feet apart from another person. So that's kind of the highlights about phase 2.5. And feel free, if anybody has any questions, put them in the chat box. I'd be more than happy to answer them for you. And the last thing I'll talk about, today, the Department of Commerce, the Division of Employment Securities, released a statement here. And I'll read that statement. On September 3rd, the Division of Employment Securities began issuing payments for lost wage assistance, the LWA, for eligible North Carolinians less than 4 weeks after federal officials announced the program on August 8th. So the LWA is funded by FEMA to provide $300 per week to supplement unemployment benefits for those who have had unemployment benefits amount of at least $100 a week and are out of work due to COVID-19. DES expects initial funds to provide LWA benefit weeks ending August 1, August 8th, and August 15th. So that they expect those payments to start rolling out, and I believe they've already started that rollout process of the monies to folks. Additional funding for the program will be determined by FEMA on a weekly basis. DEA will continue to apply for additional weeks of benefits as long as federal funding remains available and the program remains in place. So it looks like there have already been $63,000. Again, it was released today. And so as of today, $63 million or almost $64 million have been distributed thus far in the lost wage assistance. And so that adds to our total of monies paid out from March 15th through September 3rd for almost $7.3 billion in monies paid out to claimants. And so, Nathan, with that, I'll turn it back over to you. I know Chris will talk about what's going on with the budget process in Raleigh, and the governor released his budget proposal last week, and I talked about it on the call, and I'd be happy to mention any highlights if anybody would like that as well, too. But I'll turn it back over to you, Nathan.
Thank you so much, Drew. We appreciate that update. And certainly the good news from the Division of Employment Security, as far as additional benefits, yesterday our local area unemployment rates were released, and the Asheville Metro was at 9.4%, which was the fourth highest unemployment rate of any metro in the state. So, you know, we're still seeing significant unemployment due to COVID-19, and so I know we have almost 20,000 individuals unemployed in our region. But so that's really important to be able to assist them. I'd like to turn the call over to Chris Wall with EQB Strategic. And Chris, I know lots going on in Raleigh today. I don't know much at the federal level, but there's some things happening at the federal level that going on that we should know about, if you could let us know. But we appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Nathan. And I know it's been a few weeks since I've been on. Unfortunately, there hasn't been a ton to report during those few weeks, but we've got a lot to talk about today. Most of the time I get on here and I talk about most of the actions at the federal level, that script has flipped, and everything, as you know, Drew indicated, there's a tremendous amount of stuff going on in the state. But let me just start with the federal government real quick. Last time I was on, I told you that talks had really much broken down between ultimately the president and the Speaker of the House, which was on the fourth COVID package. Those conversations have commenced once again. They started late last week. They're still far apart from an overall number, but they are back at the table. I was told by Senate Appropriations Committee yesterday, U.S. Senate Appropriations Committee yesterday, that they are targeting September 30th as the day to have the continuing resolution and the fourth COVID package negotiated. So that then they could pass it on, that's a Wednesday, so they could pass it on that Thursday and Friday. So at least we've got renewed conversations on the federal level, and there's some hope that we could get a second bite at the apple or a second tranche of money from the federal government. But in the meantime, the General Assembly was in session this week, and they had roughly $900 million left in CARES funding to spend. $300 million of that was money that they had set aside for the Department of Transportation in hopes that the federal government would allow them to use that to backfill some of the budget shortfalls at DOT. Obviously, that didn't come to fruition. So the General Assembly clawed that money back and spent that money, which again equaled out to about $900 million. They passed it. The Senate passed the bill yesterday. The House passed the bill about 2 hours ago. So it is on its way to the governor's desk. Now, Drew did mention that the governor had provided his budget. The one thing that the governor and the General Assembly did agree on was the fact that they wanted to get the rest of the CARES money out into the state. There was no reason to sit on that any further. There were some differences between what the General Assembly passed versus what the governor has suggested. Specifically, there were some, the General Assembly did not provide as much for continuity and operations as the governor had asked for. And also the General Assembly put a good amount of money into scholarships, opportunity scholarships, which the governor did not request as well. There were some things yesterday on the Senate side that the governor also opposed that were amended out. So I think ultimately I had a few conversations with the governor's staff yesterday. I don't think the governor's made a decision on whether he will sign it or not, but my personal opinion is the governor will sign. And if Drew has anything more, a different opinion, he's much more knowledgeable on that than I am. But I think we're going to get a bill signed by the governor pretty soon. Some highlights of the bill: every family that has a child in school that paid taxes last year will receive $335. You don't have to do anything for that. It will just be mailed to you based on your taxes. If you did not file a tax return for one reason or another, you can go online and apply for the grant. But that is to help families pay for the virtual learning and kids being at home right now. As Drew mentioned, the lost wage program, the General Assembly was responsible for a matching component. They did provide that, so the lost wage program should be fully funded. They increased unemployment benefits in the state to $200 a week. Again, they supplied opportunity scholarships or school vouchers. There was money for hurricane recovery, monies for behavioral health, and they also additional PPE purchases. And they also provided $5 million for poll workers to make sure that we have enough folks manning the polls in November for those individuals that want to vote in person. They did adjourn sine die after the House passed their budget. So unless the governor were to call the General Assembly back, the General Assembly is officially finished for this year. But if the federal government were to pass another round of funding, I think it is very likely that the governor would call them back to get those monies out into the state as fast as possible. So Nathan, with that, I'll take any questions on any issue anybody has.
Thank you so much, Chris. And just a few questions, and maybe I got confused. So on the $335 for a family, that's not per child, that's per family. So whether you have one child or three children, that's a flat amount?
That is correct. You only have to have one child to get the $335, but it doesn't matter if you have five children, you get $335.
Oh, so it's not per child. On the UI benefits, North Carolina's maximum benefit was $350 a week. I know, the proposal was to increase that $50 to $400 a week. Then it was my understanding the federal benefit would be an additional $300. So in theory, your maximum benefit could be $700 a week. Am I following the math right, or am I confused?
Yeah, let me check my, I've got it right here. So let me just make sure I'm telling you that correctly. Unemployment benefits for North Carolina were increased by $200 a month. So you are correct. We are now at $400 a month state with the lost wages assistance program on top of that.
So the lost wage assistance program was $300, as I recall?
Yes.
So that would mean a total of $700 would be the maximum benefit.
Yes, sir.
Do they know? I think that money is going to run out in December. The FEMA funds that the president had allocated for that. Do you heard any indication on timeline? But I'd read somewhere that it was looking at around the December timeframe.
Yeah, I think that's correct. And obviously, he has limited authority in how to move those monies. I don't think that he's going to receive any legal challenge on what he did. So I think we can expect those monies to be there until December. However, if the federal government passes a fourth COVID package, additional unemployment funding will be included in that.
And I know that was about a 70-page bill, so you may not recall everything in that bill. Do you recall if there was additional funding for rental assistance in the state? We got a question in chat.
I'm looking through, but I'm fairly certain there was not rental assistance included. I think the General Assembly, which Nathan, you probably know more than I do about it, but the CDBG CV funds that the governor announced last week, I think probably the General Assembly that gave them a pass on including any additional rental assistance. I do know that's a federal issue that is hot and heavy, the glut of potential evictions that we may be facing. So, again, I'll go back and confirm, but I'm 99% sure the General Assembly did not include any additional funds. But I think we could expect to see additional funds out of the federal government from that.
All right. And there were, I think, $175 million that, you know, when the governor announced And of that, $28 million was for local governments, as I recall, and then I think the balance for utility and housing evictions, as I recall, but my recollection may not be as well. Was there additional funding? You know, the state had put a good money through Golden Leaf and the Rural Center for small business assistance. Did they put additional money into that program or small business assistance? Did you catch that or asleep at the wheel?
Yeah, no. So if you remember, we talked about the last bill last train to leave the station, I think right at the beginning of July, that the General Assembly passed, there was a new grant program for businesses that had not qualified for PPP loans or Golden Leaf loans, and what they call that, that donut hole. They put there were $250 million that they put into that program. They put an additional $45 million into that program, which came under some criticism, especially from Democrats, because the criteria was you had to have maintained 90% of your workforce, you had to have at least a 10% decline in revenue, and you could not have received any assistance from federal or state programs leading up to that. They did not put any additional funds into the Golden Leaf.
And I think that the job retention grant program that I know Dan Gerlach had shared with us, I think that is that the same program, Chris?
Yes, the job retention grant program. That's it.
So, and I don't know how many applications they received. I haven't heard. They received more applications than they had funding. They would allocate it based, you may only get 50% or 20% of what you asked for because of the cap. So maybe this will increase the ceiling there. Chris, and you may not know the answer to this, and that's okay. Were there any plans coming together to how to deploy housing funds for renters as a part of those commerce funds? Have you heard any more guidance there? I know that's being deployed through NC Commerce.
Yeah, and honestly, that's as much as I can tell you about it. I haven't heard anything. I'll check on that and see if I can't get you an update, but I haven't seen any plans out of Commerce on how the money's actually going to be dispersed just yet.
And final question, and again, thank you for joining us. I didn't see any additional assistance to cities and counties. There were the CRF funds that they provided to all 100 counties. There was a threshold minimum for those local governments that they would receive so much, and I think they put the onus on counties to work with their municipalities on how those funds would be distributed. Was there any additional funds provided through that program, Chris?
No, not that I've seen, and I'm fairly certain that they were not included. I mean they had $900 million, but the paychecks to families ate up half. So there's $500 million off the bat, but I don't believe there's any additional funds for local government.
Hopefully there'll be additional federal support there, and you broke up a little bit, but I think the funding for the families with children. That was about $400 million. Is that correct?
Closer to $500 million.
Okay. It's a big number.
Yeah.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your efforts and trying to keep us informed, and we're very grateful for you joining us. So maybe later on in the month, there'll be some additional work and things to announce, and we can have you back. But thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Thank you, Nathan.
I want to share an article just briefly, and Chris mentioned this, about the pending housing eviction crisis, and hopefully we can share that. If we can't, that's okay. But I think what's anticipated is with still the United States, there's significantly high unemployment. A lot of the federal support that was deployed earlier, that money has already been spent, whether it was assistance, enhanced unemployment, and other things. And housing affordability was the challenge even prior to this crisis. So we're honored today to have Jim Barrett, the head of Pisgah Legal Services, and Scott Dedman, head of Mountain Housing Opportunities, with us today and to share some light on this and to share some insight on our region's affordable housing challenges. So we know in general our region's wages are a little below the state and the federal median, but at the same time, our housing costs tend to be much higher, really comparable to Charlotte or Raleigh, even though our jobs don't quite pay what they do in Charlotte, Raleigh. So I'll turn it over to Jim Barrett with Pisgah Legal first.
Okay.
And, Jim, thank you for being with us today.
Well, thank you. I hope Scott will provide the expertise that he has, because I'm more speaking to some efforts to try to get rental assistance and also about the moratorium that was announced just a few hours ago, 36 hours ago. So I'll start with that because that's pretty interesting and totally unexpected by us. It's really, moratorium may not be quite the right word because it doesn't really stop evictions. It only helps people who are able to certify that they've tried to get assistance, that they lost income because of COVID-19. And
Jim, on our end, you're breaking up a little bit. I don't know if there's anything you can do on sound, but others may be hearing you pretty well. But
I'm sorry. I don't know what else I can do. I'm on Zoom all day most of the days. I can't talk
just can carry on and hopefully it'll work well.
Okay. I'll try to talk a little slower. I am hearing something ticking in the background. I don't know where that's coming from. Does anybody know where that is? Maybe somebody's not muted.
I don't know. Everyone should be muted. We'll double check. I know we've had that issue in a previous call, so we'll just go through all the participants to make sure everyone is muted.
I thought maybe it was the fact that we're recording this, that it was clicking. Anyway, the moratorium doesn't go into effect, I think, until tomorrow, and it affects evictions for non-payment of rent, not other types of evictions. It is national in scope and not limited to federally subsidized or federally insured rental properties. It remains to be seen whether it will be challenged and whether it'll hold up. I'm not sure the executive branch has that authority, but we'll see. It is through December, so it's kind of putting off the problem till the winter time. We're very worried that a lot of evictions would be occurring in the winter time. We've been making efforts to educate the public that this doesn't mean you can withhold rent or get a rent holiday. You need to keep paying your rent if you're able. And if you can't pay all of it, you need to pay part of it. We're also urging people to stay in touch with their landlords about their unemployment insurance benefits and other assistance so that there's a good working relationship and landlords will want to take the rental assistance when it becomes available. So there will be a form that a tenant has to show the landlord and the court to certify that they're eligible for the moratorium. And I can try to answer questions if people have them. If you want me to, I can go on to talk about the rental assistance project. But Nathan, you might be able to get through better than I can on that if I'm coming through clearly.
Jim, why don't we try to continue on? I think generally I heard you pretty well. I didn't hear a ticking on our end, but I know it was a little choppy. So this federal order, I know there's some questions on legality. At one time, there was a state order, but that there's no longer a state or a moratorium on evictions and utility cutoffs. Is that correct?
That's correct. And evictions are proceeding in both small claims court and if they get appealed to district court. I know there were 8 or 10 in Buncombe County District Court for tomorrow. And there's a whole lot of interest by landlords and tenants and judges in what when we're going to get the rental assistance. So I can move on to that topic if you'd like.
You can go on to that topic. That's fine, Jim.
Okay. So Buncombe County is in the best position so far that we know of to help with rental assistance. They had a program for a while, and now they have two different programs. One is in the city of Asheville, which is community development block grant money that went to entitlement cities. And that was about $400,000, which you read about in the paper. About half of that is administered by Homeward Bound. The other half is more, more or less administered by Pisgah Legal Services to make sure it gets to people who are actually in court and most likely to be evicted. And Community Action Opportunities is actually helping us administer that money so that Pisgah doesn't have to write the checks, because we really don't want to be the entity that's handing out money. So we're worried that that won't last very long, because that, you know, the city estimates that that could go to maybe 130 families, the 400,000, if everybody gets close to the max. Buncombe County has just started a rental assistance program administered by Health and Human Services, which has $335,000, I think, in it. And they are considering another program or another allocation for later in the year, assuming that's needed. So that's one pot. And then we've been talking about the CDBG COVID pot, which is $28 million for the state. And you would estimate that maybe Western North Carolina ought to get, what, $3 million of that? But the problem there is each county has to apply and it has to be administered in that county. And Nathan and I and a lot of other people have been on calls this week trying to figure out how we can get our share of that funding, because there's no distribution system evidently that would work county by county. And we have to find nonprofits who will contract with the county to disperse the money. Now, I think that it's really important that we do that county by county, because the governor also announced last week, and y'all read this in the paper, about $165 million that could be used for things like rental assistance and utility assistance. And so if it's $28 million of the $165 is CDBG COVID, how is the rest of that money going to be distributed? Maybe Drew knows. I'm glad he's still listening. I heard that some of it might be administered by the Office of Recovery and Resiliency, and we don't know how that's going to happen. But inquiring minds are very eager to know how and when that's going to be available. And it's a big deal because, as you heard in the unemployment insurance benefit discussion, not everybody's going to qualify for that. And we're concerned that, for example, the gig workers might not be included. And that's a lot of people in Western North Carolina and a lot of people in Buncombe County. So many unanswered questions about how that distribution system is going to work. And we're very eager to help make it work, we at Pisgah Legal Services, because we don't want more evictions and more people homeless and more susceptible to spreading and catching the virus. So I thought I saw at least one question.
There was Scott had added something to the post regarding the chat regarding the eviction moratorium. what would be the circumstances of renters who would get city or county rental assistance due to being in court for eviction?
So in the immediate future, you know, in the short run, as long as this money hauls out, I would say the best thing would be for them to contact Pismo Legal Services if they're in court or if they're, you know, about to be sued, so that we can prioritize them and they can get access to those funds. Homeward Bound is another resource. I'm not sure exactly what the criteria is for them, but I know that if the money runs out that we've been given charge over, we will certainly help contact Homeward Bound. And then the Buncombe County money is administered by HHS, and I assume that money can be for people in Asheville or outside of Asheville, as long as they're in Buncombe County. So they're, in the short run, I think we've got some things to look forward to. The catch, I think, is to try to make sure that the money gets to the people who don't have access to unemployment benefits or some other way to pay, because there's not going to be enough to go around. And so it's a bit of a challenge to figure out who needs it the most.
Let's turn it over to Scott now. And, you know, there may be after Scott, y'all might have an opportunity. We have a little time left to go back and forward between you. But, you know, I think from a context standpoint, you know, our rental market was really under stress prior to COVID-19, you know, from an affordability standpoint. So I don't think we've seen rents decline substantially during this crisis. But oftentimes, the wages, the work, the income of individuals has, so it creates even more stress. So, Scott, we're glad to have you on today's call, and would love to hear the perspective that you see at Mountain Housing Opportunities about housing affordability and, you know, the challenges that, especially, you know, of a potential upcoming eviction crisis in our community.
Thank you, Nathan. Thanks for the opportunity to join in. I would say that we're just going to be learning within the next 10 to 15 days how severe the loss of revenue, the loss of income from the unemployment benefits and the other funds that were received earlier in the spring and summer, now that those aren't happening to the same degree, we'll find out by mid-month, I think, how severe of a blow that is to the ability to pay rent for the very low-income renters. One fortunate thing is that in our apartments, we have just over 1,000 apartments in North Carolina, and about almost 800 of those are right here in Buncombe and Madison County, almost all in Buncombe County. But luckily, about almost 40% of them have a housing voucher of some kind from the Section 8 housing choice vouchers and the veterans vouchers and mental health. I'm not using the exact terms here for housing people, but those are the nature of the vouchers we have. And so those, the flow of money from the voucher through the voucher system, most people would think of the Section 8 vouchers, that has continued, and that's really helped the ability of the very low-income renters to pay. And then certain segments of the economy of workers that have been laid off more severely, obviously we think of the hospitality and restaurant workers. Our loss during the summer, the people's ability to pay the rent, ended up being only about 10 or 15%, but I believe that was largely because of all the assistance that has ended in the past 4 to 8 weeks. I'll be able to tell you, I think, in say 2 weeks from now, how severe the crisis is for the renters that we serve. And I think we would have to ask David Nash at the Housing Authority. They serve somewhat more than we do, perhaps twice as many very low-income renters as we do. So I'm very interested in how the state is going to roll out the Department of Commerce, and it appears that DHHS at the state level has also been involved in how to deploy funds for low income, or I should say affordable housing. I guess that's not a very definitive way to summarize what's going on right now, but it's kind of a wait and see on how severe the rent crisis is going to be. For those of us who serve primarily low-income renters, working families, elderly and disabled people, that's where our market is for our renting. And there wouldn't be much motivation to evict somebody right now for non-payment, even if we didn't have the moratorium, because there would be uncertainty about filling that unit with somebody who can pay, because so many of the low-income renters I anticipate are going to have difficulty. So I'm curious as to the nature of the evictions that Jim mentions that are coming through the court system right now. I think for landlords who have a flexibility and they're not all income restricted in their residence, ours are all income restricted, but for those who are not, I can imagine there's a lot of people that have plenty of ability to pay right now. And so evicting someone who has been laid off in favor of someone who has plenty of money to pay the rent, certainly there would be incentive in that direction if they're not prohibited because of the moratorium.
And Scott, is that largely because our rental market has been tight? I know, you know, based on the regional study, I think the city of Asheville did, the last report there was some additional slack, but it was still tight. Do you see that in the private market now? That, you know, I've heard it's some of the higher rental rates, there's been some softness.
Yeah, we're leasing up 95 new apartments on Highway 70 in Swannanoa right now, and they'll be occupied in less than a month from now. They'll be completely occupied, and we have about 10 people inquiring for every apartment. We don't get that many applications. We have two or three applications for every apartment, and so my answer is no, there's not a softening of the market in our income tier at all.
Thank you, Scott. I think Drew may be able to shed some light on INCOR and whether they are going to administer those funds through Commerce.
Yes. So, you know, there's approximately $94 million of funding that will be dispersed by the North Carolina Office of Recovery and Resiliency, INCOR, as Jim alluded to earlier. And this is to support rental and utility payments and prevent evictions for those with a demonstrated need. The funding will be distributed to eligible community agencies around the state that will work directly with North Carolinians on an application disbursement process. The funds include $28 million from Federal Community Development Block Grant, the CDBG-CV funding, and the remaining $66 million from the CARES Act, the CRF money. And that $28 million, that's a separate $28 million from what the local governments will get. So those are two separate pots. So it's a total of $94 million coming from both the CDBG-CV and the CARES Act. And then, as was just talked about earlier, there is some money that's going to be distributed by DHHS, and it's the Crisis Response and Housing Stability, which is about $53 million. and this funding is designated for the Emergency Solution Grant coronavirus program, which is through DHHS. The federal money is intended for families experiencing homelessness or who face more immediate risk of homelessness, and will be distributed by similar community agencies as mentioned previously. So
could I throw in a question, Drew?
Yes, Scott.
Might we have access to what you're reading from there on these two or three sources of funds? That would be very helpful just to kind of know these names, the Corps and the Crisis Response and Housing Stability.
Absolutely. These were actually sent out in a press release on August 25th. So if you go to the governor's main website, which is governor.nc.gov, and click on news and go to press releases and scroll down, or I guess it'll be on the second page now. And on August 25th, it says Governor Cooper announces $175 million to assist with rental utility payments for North Carolinians.
Thank you.
Drew, I was wondering if any of that money or any other money is earmarked for public utility assistance, because I hear there's $200 million in arrears to municipalities and other utility.
And so it looks like that for specific for utility payments would come from the $28 million that local governments could have access to.
Jim, Scott, Drew, do you have anything else to add? We really appreciate y'all joining us. I know there's a lot of moving parts to this, but I really appreciate y'all providing some context to the crisis we potentially could face. And I apologize for any technical issues on today's call. I heard some folks have said they only hear the ticking when I'm speaking. So I guess the lesson from that is for me to speak less. But if y'all have anything else to add, I will turn it over to y'all.
I'll jump in with one thing, Nathan, that people may be interested in. The Dogwood Health Trust has encouraged housing organizations, specifically Mountain Housing Opportunities and the Housing Assistance Corporation, HAC, in Hendersonville, to ramp up our development efforts for affordable housing. We have over 300 apartments in construction right now, and just finishing up 95 in Swannanoa, and this coming year we'll complete the 212 at Lee Walker Heights, and then moving on, also assisting the Housing Authority for the redevelopment of Deverview Apartments and then Pisgah View Apartments. But we're scouting sites right now that would win the competition in Raleigh for housing tax credit apartments, and we're looking in at least five counties of Western North Carolina. Already before COVID, and I don't have any numbers since COVID for this index, but in Buncombe County, we have over 7,400 renter households that are paying over half of their income for rent. And in the 18 Western counties, that number is 21,000 renter households paying over half of their income for rent. That includes those in Buncombe County. So you figure if you're making a wage that some people would consider a living wage around $16 an hour, the first $8 of that 16 is going to the landlord, and the other $8 remains to pay for everything else: transportation, food, medicine, child care, and all the other needs of working families and elderly and disabled people. So it's not just a COVID-related problem. It's a massive problem in Western North Carolina. And there are efforts when you talk to your legislators. Most of the federal legislation, legislators, Senate and House in North Carolina, have supported the expansion of the Housing Tax Credit Program. And that's really the only way that we're ever going to get close to meeting the need is through the Federal Housing Tax Credit Program. It's by far the largest source of housing development for affordable housing in America and in North Carolina and in Western North Carolina. And so any support you can speak to your legislative, your federal legislators on expansion of the Housing Tax Credit Program would be a great help.
Jim, any final comments?
Well, I wanted to piggyback on what Scott said. We didn't put any money in the recovery bills for the Great Recession for housing development, and we haven't put it in now. And it's unfortunate because you could create a lot of good jobs with more housing construction. And obviously we need so many more units than anybody's willing to pay for so far. The state ought to fund the housing, its housing trust fund a lot more. And it ought to be a community development recovery strategy, not just a housing strategy. Scott and I could go on for hours about how families do not reach their potential if they don't have stable housing. And I don't have to tell you all that. It does seem to be something people don't know.
Well, Jim and Scott, we know it's a major economic development issue in our region. I'll give an example, one of the largest employers in our region. Yeah, they were talking about housing for their nurses, and most of their nurses are paid very well. Actually, all their nurses, you're talking about individuals that are making, probably $60,000 or more, and they're talking about the difficulty of their nurses to find suitable housing in our region. And when our average wage is, median wage is, in the low 40s, low to mid 40s, that just sort of gives us an idea of the scale of the problem. So I know a lot of employers experience this, and this is one of the underlying challenges that our region really has to come to terms with. So we really appreciate the leadership from you and your team at Mountain Housing and Pisgah Legal Services. And thank you for joining us on our call. Again, thank you to Chris Wall and Drew Christie with the Governor's Office for joining us. Just want to remind everyone, we will not have a call next week, so we'll give you a break. I apologize for any technical difficulties. If you do have any questions or would like any resources that were mentioned today, you're welcome to reach out to me at nathan@landasky.org. And also go on our Land of Sky website. We have a COVID-19 page, and we try to place all these resources on that page. So we're here to support our local governments and our region, and we really appreciate everyone's leadership working together to help us get through these challenging times. So thank you all so much. I hope you all have a great rest of your day. Stay safe, stay well, and enjoy a beautiful day.
Thank you all.